This is a FUBAR Radio podcast. If you need any more information, head to FUBARradio.com.
Pitch Talk with Olivia Cox and Rachel Downey.
Hello, welcome to Pitch Talk. I almost missed the cue then, because I was getting too excited. Because this is Pitch Talk, I'm Rachel Downey. I'm even more excited because Olivia Cox, it's your birthday.
Happy birthday.
Thank you. It comes tinged with a slight sadness that I've just moved into another decade, which I'm not going to mention.
Hey.
But it's so strange because now I'm just faced with everyone saying, oh, what's it like?
I know, I even said that.
But I feel the same.
I don't know what we expect. I don't know what we expect.
Oh, I don't know. I don't know what you expect of me either, but thank you very much for my gluten-free red velvet cake and champagne.
Pleasure treasure.
Because champagne is also gluten-free.
It's so gluten-free and low in fat.
Yay.
What have we got on today's show, Olivia?
We have got two very important guests coming up, and we're going to be talking all things football with Tom Williams, who is a football journalist. He's got a book coming out called Do You Speak Football? And then we've got Grace Fit in the studio. I'm assuming her surname is not Fit. I'm assuming this is a reference to her.
This is hilarious because earlier on in the office, they were having the same conversation. What do you think the answer is?
I think it's because she's fit.
Yeah, exactly. And we all agree with that. But in the office, they're like, no, it's a coincidence. Her surname is Fit.
That'd be like saying, okay, we've got a football guest coming in. His name is Tommy Football.
That'd be brilliant, right?
Yeah. Do you think anyone has that?
I'd like to know.
You can rename yourself, can't you? Can you make up a name? Or does it have
to
be a legitimate
name? You can totally make up a name.
Okay.
You can be anything you want to be, babe.
Well, maybe I'll do that.
Go for it.
And we will be talking all fitness news with Grace Fit later on in the show. But for now, we will kick everything off with the sport headlines from over this weekend. So in F1, Vettel's second win of the championship over Hamilton was overshadowed as Kimi Raikkonen's, I hope I said that right, botched pit stop hit a mechanic in the pit lane,
which
was horrifying. I think he actually fractured it in two places.
Horrendous.
He did very quickly put a picture up of himself on Instagram with a big thumbs up in a very nice looking hospital. So I think he's okay.
Yeah, they're being fined though for it because it's obviously a breach of safety rules within the pit stop.
And also Kimi came under a bit of flack because he didn't actually stop. In his defence, and as he said, he is trained and paid to go when the lights go green. And that's what he did. And he didn't look back. But I don't know. I feel like you would notice if you hit a person. It's a bit worrying.
Yeah, he was putting, the mechanic was putting the wheel on the back of the car, and he hadn't finished doing it. And obviously, there was a lack of communication amongst everyone else around the car in the pit stop. And you know what it's like with a pit stop. It's chaotic.
Yeah.
He just went. So yeah, it's not Kimi's fault. It was just, it breaches every health and safety regulation.
It's the whole team's fault. And this comes back to what we were talking about last week, in that F1, although we see the racing driver in the car, coming out of the car, and it is billed as their glory, their victory, it is a team sport. And if you haven't got teammanship, is that a word?
Teammanship. It is now.
Team playership.
We have teammanship here on this show.
If you don't have teammanship, then you're not a team.
Yeah, exactly. And also, in the same F1 race in Bahrain, Hamilton took another swipe at Max Verstappen. He's 20 years old, by the way, Max Verstappen.
I see, we're
20.
Having a debate.
We were.
That makes me feel a bit sick.
How much has he achieved? The two collided in the Bahrain Grand Prix, and as the Dutchman tried to overtake Hamilton on the first lap, it resulted in a race-ending puncture for Verstappen. And then watching the replay, Hamilton was heard on TV calling Verstappen a dickhead. And then he has since then gone on and said that this is what Hamilton said through these, I don't know if it's inexperience or not totally mature decisions. They're not getting the results they want. Max should have finished a decent race. He's good enough to do that. I just hope he's learning. Do you think Max Verstappen is too hot-headed?
Yes, he's young, and there's a fine line between being very hot-headed and being, in a position to drive. And if you ask someone to get into a car and drive at crazy miles per hour, then you've got to have someone who's got a slight wiring to the hot-headedness.
Yes.
And actually, to come from Lewis Hamilton,
I know, of all people,
pot,
who look
kettle,
back, and he's, at the start, Hamilton probably would have been the same. Jenson Button was the same back
million
at the start.
1,000,000%. Absolutely was.
Yes. Yeah, so they're just, you know, I think they're just...
He's goading him.
Yes.
He was pissed off and he's now trying to...
He's really pissed off
get
now.
...get himself out of a hole because he's been made to look like a bit of a prick because he said it. Mm-hmm. Even Vettel, though, has come out and defended Hamilton. So perhaps there is something a bit more to this. Maybe the young blood really does need to chill out a bit.
But Verstappen in 2016 pretty much did the same thing to Vettel. And again, it's the hot-headedness. It's a very careless overtaking as well. And Verstappen probably needs to calm it down a little bit.
Do you think maybe it's a bit of arrogance?
Oh, totally. But isn't that a driver? I shouldn't say that, actually, because we're going to get drivers on the show.
Very true, very true. So let's move on from the F1. In the Commonwealth Games, which I'm sure everyone is glued to, we're currently on day 6. Australia are still top of the medal table. They've got 100 medals in total, so probably not going to be too much change to the leadership there. We are second, though, English athletes. They've so far won 29 golds, 29 silver and 21 bronze.
Do you think there's enough recognition for how great we are doing at the moment in the Commonwealth Games? Do you think enough people are celebrating that? Second in the medals table. It's incredible.
It's difficult because there was such a huge following of the Olympics and then the Winter Olympics. It does sort of feel like the Commonwealth Games have been given a bit of a boot out the door and no one's watching it quite as much. And interestingly, I was watching it the other day and noticed that I'm not sure exactly what it's called, but the Paralympics version of the Commonwealth, that all happens at the same time as the Olympics version of the Paralympics. Does that make sense?
Yeah, totally makes
so
sense.
So the able-bodied and the para all goes in together. And actually, I had thought that that might mean that we would be more keen to watch because you see everything at once. And I'm quite surprised that...
Not enough is being made of it.
No. Mm. I don't know if it's maybe because the football season is going and the rugby season is going...
But it's true. When you see the
F1
back pages.
Started.
But, you know, you look at all the... Obviously, you've got a lot of football on the back pages. You've got the rugby. That's literally the only bit in the paper is a little snippet.
Yeah.
That's it.
I wonder if it's something to do with because we're not doing great and we're not doing badly. Maybe
possibly.
We're not winning.
Yeah, if we were at the top of the medals board,
if we were top or if we were trailing, if we were nil point, I'm sure there'd be plenty of media coverage. But I think there is coverage. It's just...
Not
these
enough.
Are athletes who are really good at what they do and they are just going and being athletes and they possibly aren't as well known because quite often they're younger. I saw a report the other day, in fact it was yesterday, saying that such a high proportion of our athletes are coming through from St Mary's University in Twickenham, which is actually following in the footsteps of some of our greats, so they have a strong tradition of this, but this does mean that they tend to be quite a lot younger, but they're not doing anything controversial.
Yeah, and again, if people were doing something controversial out there, again, it would change things.
Unfortunately, that is what drives the media.
Yeah, it's
and
true.
That's what gets us all talking. Except here on FUBAR Radio, we will talk about sport.
We will talk and talk and talk and talk and talk until the hour is up.
However, we'll move on now from the Commonwealth Games.
Enough time now.
In rugby, Dylan Hartley's place on the England tour of South Africa this summer is in question after Northampton admitted the national captain's latest concussion layoff is a cause for concern. Now, we've spoken a little bit about concussion and the spit test that was being introduced. This is a worry. And the fact that it's worded that Northampton have admitted it does make you wonder, are clubs covering this up?
It's a tough one, isn't it? Because we can't say, obviously, whatever we say it's not legally binding in any way whatsoever. Just put that out there in case there's a lawsuit coming our way. But yeah, you do. I think maybe there is a bit of a cover-up in rugby, full stop. I mean, they keep on talking about the fact that more needs to be done on concussion and the long-term effects. But until, they change certain regulations. But then, you're a big rugby fan. Mm. If they do kind of, calm down, I'll say the word brutality. I know it's not brutal. Wouldn't that change the game?
It would. And I think it's very difficult. You're not going to really be able to change the way the players play because the game of rugby, that's how it's played. Mm. I think what needs to be done is more recognition of the warning signs of being stricter about taking people off. You know, if you back in the day, if you were bleeding on the pitch, you would carry on.
Yes.
And then it's relatively recently that you get blood binned.
I mean,
So you're taken off until you don't please. It should be like that, though. And it really, really should be. Even if a player continues to move, if they've taken a big hit, the trouble is there's no physical evidence.
Yeah.
So that's why they were bringing in the spit test, and I don't know how successful it has been. But for someone like Dylan Hartley to actually have suffered such a string of concussions that he now cannot play for England.
Do you think this will be an epidemic in, say, I don't know, maybe 20 years' time when we have a look back at the state of the...
Yes, I think it will, because...
Same with headers in football.
Exactly.
That was my header there, babe.
I thought it might
be. Yeah, very skilled. Very skilled.
I really hope that got picked up on camera. Do you want to do it again, just in case? Clonk. There you go. That was Rachel's header. Yeah. I do. I think we're going to find that some of these players, especially the younger players who've been playing at high level for such a long time, we're suddenly going to see them coming through with all sorts of problems, dementia, long-term illnesses or even conditions that they might be predisposed to might have been sped up. So it's something that the RFU and the coaches, they've all got a responsibility to be looking into.
Here, here.
In my
boom
grand opinion.
Sorry, that boom it. Haven't boomed for a while. That's an odd sentence.
In golf, American Patrick Reed held off Ricky Fowler and won the Masters by 1 point, which is a little bit nail-biting, whilst Brit Hope Rory McIlroy suffered more heartbreak with his worst round of the week. And actually, I think it's the second time, is it, that the 28-year-old has done a similar thing on that course.
Can he handle the pressure?
It does make you think.
Yep.
It's his time up.
And it's quite interesting with Patrick Reed. He says here that he has become the most unpopular major champion of all time. It's all down to do with accusations, stealing, cheating, and he also treats his family like dirt.
Does he?
Really bad. He's disowned them.
Hang on.
He's disowned his family.
As in his wife?
No, his family, so his mum, dad and his sister didn't like his wife-to-be, so he turned his back on his family and married his wife. Ooh. To the point that even at one tournament, I think back in 2014, the US Open, he got the police to throw his family off the course because they were there to watch him. And he's also alienated crowds. He has called New Yorkers obnoxious, and he's also told the Glen Eagles crowd to shush at the Ryder Cup.
Has anyone told him that he's a bit obnoxious?
Yeah, I think maybe people should.
Yeah, I think that might be a good way to go.
Well, I think you just have. So there we go, Patrick Reed, Olivia Cox.
I also
you
think,
heard it here.
Couples who dress together
should maybe together.
Yeah, should maybe refrain from doing so on national TV. Oh. His wife did give him a massive kiss wearing a sort of lurid pink top, which I really hope wasn't colour coordinated to his outfit, but it looked so much like it was.
Do you dress like your partner?
God, no. Have you seen how he dresses?
Yeah, and I wouldn't dress like mine either, but then I wouldn't want him to dress like me, a bit of a 80s throwback victim.
Well, you know what? We're both wearing pink.
We are.
And it's actually the same shade of pink.
We're just cool, babe. That's what I can say.
Thanks, everyone.
The last story I want to add is New Orleans, well, former New Orleans Saints cheerleader Bailey Davis filed a complaint with the Equal Opportunity Commission because she says the team treats female cheerleaders differently than male football players. Davis was fired after posting a picture of herself in a one-piece outfit on her private Instagram account, which violated the team's prohibition of appearing nude, semi-nude or in lingerie. The fact that the account was private didn't matter because apparently once you sign to be a cheerleader for the team, you must live with their specific code of conduct at all times.
Hang on, how much more naked was she than when they're performing?
Yeah, exactly. 100%. And then we were reading this earlier on, and it's shocking. And we've done a little bit with cheerleading, haven't we? Well, we have cheered.
I'm not sure I'd go so far as to say that we've really done it. We tried.
No, we tried. So here we go. These are the rules, the NFL cheerleader rules. If a New Orleans Saints cheerleader enters a restaurant and a player is already there, she must leave. Horrendous. If a cheerleader is in a restaurant and a player arrives afterwards, she must leave. They're also coached on their body language and dining etiquette. Little things that it said, like bread is to be broken with hands, you've got to pass food to your right. So it's very...
So hang on, what is their role then?
Cult-like. Well, not.
So they're designed to be like a
pretty
living,
nice but
Barbie.
Quiet, yes. Regular, they're subjected to regular weigh-ins and they're also expected to maintain an ideal body weight. Also, the pay they have is below par. Their pay is really, really bad. It doesn't reflect the working conditions.
Well, I would be really interested to find out whether or not a football player has ever posted a semi-nude picture onto his Instagram account.
Well, yeah. But why should the Chile have to leave a restaurant?
I know, that's hideous. That's like going back to the 1950s.
Yes.
I mean, football seriously needs to up its game and come into the 21st century, because that is shocking.
And do you know what? It's very brave that she's done this, I think, that she's come forward and she is filing a lawsuit. And then I know as well, they're not allowed to date football players either. And it's... Which, a little bit like that, you kind of think, okay, because it's work and you shouldn't mix it. And I guess with the weigh-ins... When I was a dancer, I used to be the Royal Ballet, but when I was little, and we had, so when I was about 11, yeah, I went to White Lodge.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I grew up near White Lodge.
Oh, did you?
I used to go there to have hot chocolate with my friend because her dad was head of ballet or something.
Oh my God, that's amazing.
Oh my God, that's so cool.
But we had regular weigh-ins. I had my fat, 11 years old,
caliper,
kind of clamped and things like that, just to kind of work out, yeah, my weight. So that side... I kind of get they have a certain image to portray, but to have to leave a restaurant, to have to get the sack because you took a photograph of yourself.
Especially when your job requires you to be pretty body confident.
That's ridiculous. Hmm. So this will be quite interesting to see what happens, actually, when it goes to court.
Yeah, and I think there is going to be a bit of a backlash because actually more and more people have actually spoken out now saying that actually there's a huge amount of harassment and sexual misconduct that these girls are having to face on a daily basis. And, I mean, the role is sexualised, but fundamentally they are dancers. They are athletes.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Perfectly said. And I think on that note...
Thanks.
That's all right, my lovely. On that note, we will be having Tom Williams in the studio very, very shortly, our football journalist. If you're thinking, well, where's all the football chat? Where is it? It's coming. But before he arrives in the studio, obviously we've got Liverpool and Man City who play their second leg of the Champions League quarter-final game tonight. And so here is what Pep Guardiola and Jurgen Klopp had to say yesterday ahead of that game.
To go through, you have to make almost the perfect game.
I'm not interested in this kind of labels, favourite and underdog.
My team is extraordinary. My team is no comparable for many others. My team is exceptional, so I will be close to them no matter what happened here until the end of the season. So it's a joy to be manager.
We are only in the lead. No problem with that. It's better than I could have expected. But we all know, and I think you all know, that there is still a lot of work to do.
We have 90 minutes plus extra time, and what we show in this year, even in the last game, we are able to create a lot of chances in a few minutes, and we know that, and the opponents know that.
We all know about Pep, best coach and manager in the world, and then it was clear that they will be outstanding, but there's no perfect football team in the world, that the games doesn't give you chance to be perfect.
I'm so delighted to, you know, to lose the way, for example, we lose against United. So I don't want to lose. We are sad because for our fans to be champion, but we have more sick chances to do that. But the way we played is outstanding.
You saw the first half against United. How I said, in a normal game for City against one of the best teams in the world, United, they could have scored 6 goals.
Football, like life, is a challenge.
We have to be at our best again. That's how it is.
If we are not able to do that psychologically, it will be a good lesson for the future, because we are not here for just a few months.
It's all about being stable in the game in all the different moments, still being brave, being lively, being high energetic, try to cause them as many problems as possible and all these things. So it will be football.
Yes, it will be football indeed. Little play out there was Pep Guardiola and Jurgen Klopp ahead of tonight's Champions League clash. I like that. Clash of the Titans.
It's going to be an exciting one. As a non-football fan, I will put my hand up. I actually watched the first leg.
I'm so proud of you. I'm so proud.
I'm so proud too. And I really got into it, actually.
It's a brilliant game. Brilliant game. And, you know, here to talk more about it is Tom Williams, football journalist. Welcome, Tom.
Thank you.
How are you today?
Very well, thanks. How are you both?
We're good, aren't
really
we?
Really well, thanks.
Very good, very good. Well, let's just go straight, first of all, into the game this evening. We'll talk about the first leg. Mm-hmm. What did you think to it? How incredible incredible were Liverpool. They're a force to be reckoned with at the moment.
Yeah, it was really surprising because Man City have been this season's outstanding team in the Premier League.
Yeah.
And they were being seen by many as the Champions League favourites, and Liverpool just completely blew them away. And I think, looking back, Pep Guardiola made a bit of a tactical gamble that didn't really pay off. But even with that, you wouldn't expect City to lose that heavily.
No, not at all.
And suddenly it just puts Liverpool in complete control going into tonight's return leg because, I mean, they're a fantastic counter-attacking team anyway. They're probably the last team in Europe that you'd want to find yourself facing in this sort of situation.
Yep.
Because they're so good on the break. So, yeah, big task ahead for City.
I've got some stats here. So only 10 teams have managed to reverse a deficit of 3 or more goals from the first leg in history. They say that if City score within 22nd minute, that could be a very good sign for them if they're the first.
Yeah, I mean, they sort of have to score the first goal. Because if they score, if Liverpool score the first goal, then it's toast because City would then need 5.
Yes.
So you're expecting there'll be a good atmosphere. Obviously, the players are going to be well up for it, the fans as well. But it could very quickly go badly. And that's the tightrope that City have got to walk.
And has City now lost, is it 3 games?
They've lost their last 2.
Which is a shock.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
also,
given that they hadn't lost at all in the league, you know, they'd only lost 1 game in the league prior to the weekend, and that was against Liverpool, and they lost 4-3 at Anfield. They then go 2-0 up against United on Saturday, having come off the back of that very poor result against Liverpool, but then lose it in the second half against United. And so this super team suddenly looks quite vulnerable for the first time.
Well, let's actually, before we do touch on other teams in the Premier League, what is it that Liverpool have done, has Jurgen Klopp done to Liverpool that made them this third now on the table, this fantastic, defensively fantastic team?
I think the main thing is that he's found players who are good at playing his style of football. Mm-hmm. He's a very, like, his football is very aggressive, Jurgen Klopp. He likes his teams to be constantly on the front foot. And the idea is that they don't have to do too much defending in their own defensive third because they spend so much time attacking and winning the ball back high up the pitch. And I think that's the key. If you look at the attacking players they have, the pace they have in their front line, that's the key to their identity. And it's the energy that those players bring, Sadio Mane, Roberto Firmino, and in particular Mo Salah, who's having
Salah,
this phenomenal
tonight,
season, should play tonight.
Yep.
That really sets sets their identity, sets the tempo.
Yeah, and it was a fantastic game. And well, let's look now. We'll go to Man City. I'm a big Spurs fan. We've got them, obviously, this week.
You do?
Again, Spurs. A lot of rumours, and I was talking last night to a few people about this, and they reckon Poch might leave. What do you think? Because this will frighten me a lot. I don't think he'll go yet. I think we need to win some silverware. Obviously, probably FA Cup. What do you think about Poch at Spurs? And he's done an incredible job, hasn't he? This is the best Spurs team, I think, I've seen in a long, long, long time.
Yeah, I mean, certainly it's the best Spurs team that I can remember watching. You know, and that's not just this season. This has been coming on for 3 seasons now of consistent growth, consistent improvement. Mauricio Pochettino is clearly very attached to this group of players. And I think the way that Tottenham's business model is constructed, that the relatively low wages that they pay their players means that it's really important that everyone buys into the project, if you like. And I think something that works in the club's favour is this imminent move to the new stadium at White Hart Lane.
Yeah.
And they've had this very awkward season at Wembley where, you know, they're not playing in a stadium they know. They had that dreadful record at Wembley before they started playing there this season. But they seem to have got over that.
Yeah.
And I suspect that everyone at the club now, with the possible exception of Toby Alderweireld, who looks like he's going to leave, I think they all want to be there next season when the new stadium opens, when Champions League football comes.
It'd be
to
a shame for them
the
to go,
day.
Anyone
yeah.
to go
yeah,
for the new stadium.
But I mean, the worry for Spurs is that of all their big names, and you include the manager in that, I think he's probably the most likely to be the first one to leave, just because he is so coveted, and we know how quickly the big European clubs go
he'll
through managers. I mean, he's not going to be at Tottenham forever.
No.
The hope is that by the time he leaves, he's won something, you know, and that these foundations he appears to be creating, you know, are as solid as they can be.
Yeah. Do you think Kane? I think Kane will always stay with Spurs. I think it's a bit like a Steven Gerrard. But I often get ridiculed for that as a you know, what do you think? Do you think
I'd like to think he'd stay. And I mean, to be honest, he's that's generally been what he's always said.
Yeah.
I mean, we know, you know, he's a local boy, he's from just up the road. Harry Kane is one of our own and all that. And he there's something very throwback about Kane, like everything about him, like the way he plays, the sort of slick back hairstyle. Like, yeah. He doesn't look like someone who dreams of one day playing for Real Madrid. But then every now and again, he'll mention something, you know, the way that footballers do. Well, this is where I am, but, you know, who knows in the future. Mm-hmm. I suspect that he, if it was down to him, he would stay at Tottenham forever. But if Tottenham, you know, stop being as successful as they are at the moment, if they were to become a mid-table team again, and yes. he's still England's best striker, then things might change.
Yes, I agree.
I mean, you'd like to think he'll stick around.
And I'll talk about a couple of other teams very quickly. Man U, how do you think they are? Yeah, I mean, the Laos game was amazing.
Yeah, and like one of the weirdest games in that you occasionally see teams come from 2-0 down to win, but United played so badly that first half. They just weren't yeah. in it at all. They yeah. hadn't laid a glove on City, and it should have been 3 or 4-0. Mm-hmm. And then they come out in the second half, and without Mourinho having really changed anything, just their attitude was so much better. And I think, you know, if you look at United's season globally, in terms of the Premier League, they've had a good season. Like, if you take City out of the equation, and what City are doing is, like, total freakery statistically, United having a very honourable season. The problem they have is that the football's still not great, and they had that disastrous exit in the Champions League against Sevilla.
Yep.
But, you know, they're still in the FA Cup. It could still be quite a successful season.
Yeah.
But I think because they're that far off the pace and because losing to Sevilla was such a letdown, it's a bit of a mixed feeling.
Mm-hmm. And very quickly, Arsenal... Arsene Wenger, do we think this is it now for him? It has to be,
the problem, surely. The problem is that the only person that decides is Arsene Wenger. There's no one above him at the club who is ever going to knock on his door and say, Arsene, the time has come to leave. He, because of his achievements at the club...
And we've got Europa. If they win that, do you think he'll stay?
Exactly. I think he'll stay whatever happens, because he's just the most ridiculously stubborn man in football. I mean, you cannot ignore the rot that set in at Arsenal. Mm. And, like, the last few seasons has just been... Things have just got worse and worse and worse. I mean, they're still a big club. They're still capable of winning things and playing well, but... despite all that, no one is pushing him. There's no pressure on him from above. It will be he who decides when he leaves, and I don't think he's ready to leave yet.
No, I think his ego is doing all the talking. Who do you think is going to be? Well, first we City, whatever happens. But who's going to be top four? City?
The top four looks quite set at the moment. Mm-hmm. I think it's a 10-point gap now between Spurs in fourth and Chelsea in fifth. The way Chelsea are playing, you can't see them bridging that.
No.
In terms of the order of the top four, I mean, City have obviously won it. United have got a little gap between them and third, so you put them second.
Yep.
Then it's between Spurs and Liverpool for fourth. Hard to say. I mean, I wouldn't put it past Spurs to go past them, particularly if Liverpool are still involved in Champions League. I'm not just saying it's you, by the way.
I know.
If Liverpool are still involved in the Champions League, then that's going to take up a lot of their resources. Mm. So Spurs, sadly, don't have that distraction anymore, so maybe they'll be able to finish the season more strongly.
Yeah, brilliant.
Tom, you have got a book coming out.
Yes, I do.
And as I sit here watching the ping pong game of football chat, I wonder, is this for someone like me? Your book... Do you speak football? Can you tell us a bit about it?
Okay. Given what I know about your own attitude towards football, Olivia, I'm suggesting perhaps not. But
attitude. But, I don't know if this is attitude.
Sorry, attitude. I didn't attitude as in like a bad attitude.
Okay,
I meant like your general feeling about the sport.
Yeah, my slight aloofness.
You're getting there, though.
Aloofness is a better word.
Yeah, that's what it is.
So the book is a glossary of football terminology from around the world. So it's like quirky... funny, interesting phrases from all sorts of different countries. So if you're not mad keen on football, it might not be for you. But if you're interested in languages and, you know, I think a big theme of the book is the way that different countries look at football, the different sorts of words they use. Mm. You have some countries who talk about football in a very humorous way. There are other countries where it's taken a lot more seriously. It's a lot more technical. And, you know, everywhere you go, you find examples of... idioms and metaphors that could only exist in that particular country. Like in Kenya, there's loads of ones to do with snakes, stuff like that.
Brilliant.
So can you give us an example?
I'll give you an example from Kenya. I have to see if I can remember how to pronounce it. It's Kukanyaga Nyoka, which is Swahili, and it means to step on a snake. And to step on a snake is a metaphor they use for when someone has a shot at the ball and just misses it completely. What we'd call an air shot in English.
That's so good.
Someone does that in a football match in Kenya. Oh, you stepped on a snake. Because if you live in Kenya, then you know, presumably, what it's like to step on a snake.
Or
if you don't, you probably know someone who does.
Oh, that's brilliant. I think our commentators should start using that. it wouldn't make any sense to anyone else. But it would make sense to
me. You could introduce
I
bit
suppose
by bit.
The interesting thing about the book and the different dialects is that obviously it is very location specific. So, for example, we don't really have snakes in the UK.
No.
But we might have some examples of phrases. In fact, I can think of many, not even from sport, but we have very many phrases which make no sense.
Yeah, and you use them so regularly that you don't even realise that they're weird. And then I used to live in France, and every now and again you'd try and translate something literally from English into French, and you'd use some ridiculous metaphor like pigs might fly, and they're like, what? That literally doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
But you use them, and they're so ingrained in the language that you don't even realise that they're absurd. So that's what writing this book has been a bit of an exercise, and it's been finding all these phrases, and often people don't realise how interesting they are because you just say it, and it might be a really colourful phrase you use, but because you've always said it, you don't actually think about how that sounds to someone hearing it for the first time.
That's so true. It's like trying to explain to someone, like, also things like pigs in blankets. What is that? It's like, oh, you don't know.
Yeah, you slightly judge them. So, Tom, how did you get into thinking about the language? Was that from your experience of travelling?
Well, as I said before, I used to live in France, and I reported on French football, so my knowledge of the language of French football was quite good. A friend of mine edits a football journal called The Blizzard. It comes out like four times a year. It's sort of a home for football writing that doesn't belong anywhere else. Mm. Anyway, he'd been asking me to write something for it, so I wrote a French football glossary using all my favourite French football terms, and off the back of that I got in touch with the publisher, who were looking for someone to write a global football glossary. Wow. And that's how it happened. So it was almost by accident writing this book. It just worked out really well.
How exciting.
That's so exciting. Have you enjoyed it? Have you enjoyed the process?
Yeah, I have. The funniest bit is that, like, it's not it comes out May the 3rd, so it's not in the shops yet, and actually this period of waiting for it to go on sale is unexpectedly nerve-wracking, because all the time I've had working on the book, it's just me and the book, and like there's almost a feeling that it's not real, that it's never actually going to go on sale, and as long as no one else has seen it, you don't have to worry what people are going to think about it, because it's just you and the book, and suddenly like people have got it, and the publishers are sending it out to people now, and
it's become very real.
Like, oh my god, like,
you start to get a bit of feedback.
Yeah. And plus I'm writing about all these languages that I don't actually speak myself, so I've been very dependent on the assistance of people like helping out with like different sections. I'm just kind of hoping that they haven't dropped me in it by giving me, like, you know, the Japanese equivalent of a fridge manufacturer's name or something.
I mean, that would
be some epic swear word.
Yeah.
For example, that's probably the bigger thing. Be great publicity though. Like, once I got over the crushing blow.
They do say all press is good press.
They do. I should bear that in mind.
Yeah, definitely. For the next book.
Next
one. Then the next one will make it into a trilogy. So your book, Do You Speak Football, is out, you said, then the...
Out the 3rd of May, May. And it's on Amazon. I think you can get it on Kindle and all that jazz. So however you consume your literature, there is a format for you.
Fantastic. Yeah. And very quickly, what do you think the score will be tonight?
I reckon... I'm really bad at predictions, actually. I say 2-2. I think there'll be some goals.
Okay.
I can't see Liverpool not scoring. Mm-hmm. I mean, City will do better than they did in the first leg, almost because they have to.
Yeah.
But I just think Liverpool is so dangerous. I can't see City keeping a clean sheet. No. So
be a good game,
that's what
hopefully.
I'm going to go for. Yeah.
Brilliant. Tom Williams, thank you very much for talking.
Thank you for having me.
Annoyingly, that's all we've got time for. I could talk more about football, although Olivia's probably I think enough's enough
people. Yes, she could.
Enough is enough. Right, we're going to take a little breather, but do not go anywhere. We'll have all the latest fitness stories with Olivia after this.
FUBAR Radio presents Access
All Areas. London Hughes, hello.
Hi. Gemma Collins is a lovely woman. The JC is a different beast.
There's two.
There's Gemma Collins and there's the JC.
So Beyonce and...
I've met them both. And Gemma Collins is so sweet. The JC, I can't. I just can't.
Oh, what? She is too much.
When that guy came into the restaurant and he was like, you're a bit late or something. And she was like, I can't handle this.
Yeah.
Grand babe.
Because there's JC.
But is that real or is it for the
100%
camera?
100% real. 100%. That's the side of her.
Every Thursday. Access All Areas. From 6 p.m.
FUBAR Radio.
Yes, this is FUBAR Radio. This is a pitch talk. We are live all the way through till 5 o'clock. So it's 4 till 5 every Tuesday.
Live till 5. That's good, isn't it?
Oh, live till 5.
Although, I mean, only from 4. But
it doesn't matter. Live until... We'll work it out. We'll come up with a really good saying,
Olivia.
We
need a catchphrase.
We do need a catchphrase. Do you remember the programme catchphrase? Doesn't matter. I'm showing my age.
Oh, the programme. Yes, yeah. I do. With the little yellow man.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, I love that.
I can't do the cheer. Doesn't matter. Let's move on. Fitness stories.
We have got some juicy fitness stories that I'm really excited to talk about today, actually. And we are going to have Grace Fit in the studio, who is a personal trainer and a YouTuber. And she also has fitness guides, so we can pick her brains a bit. And
I need to do that.
Generally find out where we're going wrong, because there are so many myths that surround fitness and nutrition. And I was actually at a nutrition course this weekend, and one of the most interesting things was what people buy into and what they believe, and actually the manufacturing and the advertising that is involved in all these protein supplements and BCAAs and creatine. When you strip it back, there is actually very little that you need, and actually we should be getting all of our foods from foods. Does that make sense?
Yeah, so basically we shouldn't need supplements.
We shouldn't really need supplements. So this is going back a little bit to what we talked about last week when a school was giving out protein supplements, so like a protein shake to their students. And actually, even if you really strip down your macros and you're trying to do a real weight loss program to if it fits your macros, you should be able to get everything from food, unless you are a really, really, really high-end athlete, professional athlete, and you're training multiple times a day, and it's just not physically possible to get those nutrients in you. You can do it through food.
I think I'd love to attend a course like that, actually, because I'm very stuck in my ways when it comes to what I think works for me and how I, keep trim, keep healthy. But I actually think I need to be more educated on it. I'll tell you what, we will get to your topics in a sec, but I think with me, it's the whole carb thing.
Yeah.
It's embracing that and knowing that what is good, what's not good. I'm more educated in
it. It's realising that carbs aren't just a vehicle to putting on weight. Mm. I mean, everything was shattered when suddenly we realised fats don't make you fat. So a lot of people started having a very high fat diet.
Avocado.
But still carbohydrates have this dirty connotation. Yeah. But actually, and what's really interesting is that there are certain foods that if you eat them thinking they're protein, they actually don't deliver the protein, because you need a full profile of amino acids. I think it's something like 22 amino acids to be called a complete protein. And it is weird mixtures of stuff that will create that. So things like rice with peas, I don't know, I don't make this stuff up, but somehow that gives you the full profile.
No.
So a meat source like chicken or something, yes, that is a full profile, that is a complete protein. But if you're going for a vegetarian option, then something like quinoa you have to have with something else. Chickpeas with wheat. Lentils with rye. I honestly couldn't tell you why or how.
So fascinating.
It is so interesting. There is so much information out there. I could talk for ages, which I won't, because as well as nutrition, we have some really exciting fitness stories. In Connecticut, a gym has launched a selfie room. And this is a dedicated space complete with good lighting and hair products.
Amazing.
And this is off the back of the gym realising that so many of their members like to take these great post-workout selfies.
Yeah, you see it all the time.
And so they've created a room, but they have had such a bad backlash.
Well, are you surprised? What do you think of this?
I think it's a bit ridiculous. I have to say, I love taking a good selfie.
You're very good at them. You're very good.
In gyms, I find it awkward because I don't want to get Joe Bloggs lifting his weights in the background. A, think of the profile. But B, he's not going to like that. And there are issues around privacy and people's modesty. And especially somewhere like the gym, that is your space. And so if this gym is saying, here's a selfie room, just do not take selfies somewhere else, I agree with it.
And do you think it has like weights in the room? Because if I were to take a picture at the gym, I want people to know I'm in the gym.
I believe it has props.
Oh! Oh my God, this gets better!
I know.
And I do like the fact with good lighting, let's be honest, that is essential. And the lighting in the gym is pretty poor.
It's rarely good
when you sway.
So interesting. Have a look at the Connecticut gym with a selfie room, if that floats your boat. A little bit closer to home, Chiltern Railways have partnered with the University of Oxford Mindfulness Centre to launch the UK's first ever train yoga. And this aims to promote mindfulness and combat our increasing reliance on digital devices, which I sort of understand, because they started off with these quiet carriages where you're not allowed to use your phone.
Yeah, I know. It's so annoying.
No, it's terrible. terrible, especially when someone actually enforces it. Yes. And you feel like a naughty child, and you feel, yes, a bit sort of like, well, why?
Well, just stop because, yeah, of this. And also, when you make that mistake, and I've done it, actually, no, very quickly, my sister's hen, I was in charge of, like, obviously sorting out the train tickets. So you got all the bottles of sparkling, all excited, you're on the train. I booked one of those carriages.
Oh, no.
Like, really? I had to just apologise to everyone because it's like, look, it's her hen. I am not being quiet.
But strictly, it's just mobile phone noise, isn't it?
Ah.
So surely...
It's a good point.
Actual passenger noise.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I'm sure there's a loophole there.
I'm sure there is.
But this mindfulness zone was trialled on the 4th of April. So I would love to know if anyone out there was, yes, on this yoga train. Now, I've seen images of it. They're on the Metro online. And it looks as if there are literally people yoga-ing down the aisles. Which seems a bit extreme to me. But if you think back to when, well... It wasn't when they first brought in long-haul flights, but when I first went on a long-haul flight, I can remember my parents sticking their arms in the air and doing all these head movements and saying, oh, it's for DVT, we must do these workouts. So maybe it's a similar thing.
And is this an actual, like, so in other carriages, there's normal people, but people are just sitting down. Is this an actual track?
I believe it is just a zone. So it's just a carriage or two carriages.
Well, if it gets too busy in there, standing room only. Livy's getting all excited.
I was about to try and demonstrate what might happen. I wonder if you have to do it on your own or if you get led by a teacher.
It's another good question.
I've got so many questions.
There's
Maybe
so
we should
many.
Get someone in from Chiltern Railways to answer some of our questions.
Oh my God, I'd love that. I really, really would.
Good.
We should do it.
I'll try that.
Yeah, we'll call Chiltern. I'll be on the phone.
And moving on... Another thing that I would really like to just briefly touch upon is this difference between fitness and weight loss. And we spoke about this a lot at the nutrition course with Number One Fitness at the weekend. And there's this desire at the moment, and it sort of drives people into the gym. It drives people to do a workout. It's purely aesthetic. So they want to lose weight or they want to tone up or something. They want to lose a dress size. And so rather than saying, I want to be fitter... They have this goal of weight loss. And this means that if someone starts to put on weight because muscle weighs more than fat, they can feel quite disillusioned. At the same time, if they start to look a bit more muscular in their arms,
it changes your...
Frankly, that's healthier than someone who's under-eating. But we're driven at the moment by this culture of absolute body perfection. And what we see online is not real.
Do you think, it's, as I mentioned with me when it comes to food... It's a lack of education when it comes to it. It's a lack of knowledge. Do you think a lot of us have that when it comes to exercise,
hugely,
fitness?
I think the problem for a lot, especially females, but I know that it is a problem with males as well, is that when we're younger, we're driven this extreme competitiveness against each other, and it can almost become one-upmanship and this sort of obsession.
Yes.
And it's a little bit toxic. And when we were younger, you didn't have social media.
I'm so grateful for that.
Now we have social media, so... Not only could you be getting it in person in the playground, but you log in online and you can just compare yourself. And I think the quick fix is you just stop eating. And people do that. That people will chronically underconsume calories without realising that actually exercise is a much more efficient way to be healthy and also to lose weight as sort of a backup.
Yeah, and very, very quickly... You mentioned you saw on Instagram that the before and after, there was an Instagrammer who did a photo shoot.
She did, yeah. I'll look this up because I can't remember her name.
And we can mention it.
We'll talk to Grace a little bit about it because she essentially posted two pictures side by side. And in one of them, she looked absolutely stunning, amazing, really strong. She was tan, she was glistening, wearing all the right gym clothes, and in the one next to it she said you'll never guess when this photo was taken, and it was the day before when she didn't have the tan, she didn't have the lighting, she didn't have the hair and makeup, and she looks gaunt and she looks really, really unwell. And I think it's really unhealthy and quite dangerous that we're saying to our younger people, which I can now say now that I'm 30, we're telling them this is what you need to look like, look at this girl on Instagram, and buy a professional makeup artist, she can be made to look banging. But if in reality you have to have such a low body fat that you actually look very unwell in real life, no one's going to be able to achieve that healthily.
And we need to, I think that's great that we can see that and we can talk about it a lot more. We have a TED Talk now. Leanne Spencer, interestingly, who talks about this, why fitness is more important than weight.
A 2012 study found that the average British woman spends 17 years of her life on a diet. 17 years. A 2013 study by the National Institute of Health Research found that 25% of 13-year-old girls regularly skip meals to maintain a thin appearance. Our mirrors are ruining our lives and that of our children, and that has to stop now. Let me share with you a little story. A few months ago, I went to see a show called Circa on London's South Bank. It features six acrobats, male and female, and they perform for about 75 minutes. And during this show, you witness the most incredible feats of athleticism, strength, and bravery. And when the show had finished, something struck me, and it actually had nothing to do with the stunts that I just witnessed. It was to do with the acrobats' physiques. Some of them were very outwardly muscular. Some had a layer of fat over their abdominals. And some of them even had puppy fat on their inner thighs. All very ordinary stuff, but from people doing the most extraordinary things. And it struck me then that we've got things wrong. For many of us, the pursuit of a perfect body means we've forgotten about what's really important, and that's the health of our bodies on the inside. We praise people for their skinny appearance, ignoring the fact that potentially they've got there through a very unhealthy and restrictive diet. What if we move the focus from fatness to fitness? Too many of us have a warped and distorted view of how we look, which is fed into by the advertising industry, the media, the fashion world, and of course the multi-million pound weight loss industry. We need to be much less critical of ourselves and of others. And instead of making our goal a perfect body or a perfect dress size, whatever that means, it should be about getting more active. Let's reconnect with our bodies in a primeval way and make fitness something that we all do because of how it makes us feel. Perfect doesn't exist, but happy and healthy does.
Hear, hear. I'd say perfect does not exist. That is Leanne Spencer, who was talking there. There's a TED Talk, Why Fitness is More Important Than Weight. And we've got a perfect guest in the studio now just to talk about that. Grace Fit, hello.
Hi.
Hello, how are you?
Good, thank you. How are you?
Very good. Quick question. I think I know the answer. I think Olivia knows the answer. But other people have been having this conversation. Fit isn't your surname, is it?
No, it's not. Actually, quite a few people have thought before. And often on events, I have to go through various different names to actually get my guest list name. So it's often, I kind of go through a list of things like Grace Fit. Grace Fit UK.
That's
amazing. So it's usually a long list.
Do you ever get people that will email you with Dear Mrs. Fit?
Yeah.
Is that quite satisfying?
Yeah, well.
Yes, I am.
You're like, yeah, thank you so much. Or not so much, or like, oh God, just stop reminding me. Like, I haven't been to the gym for a week.
You say that, so you're a personal trainer, YouTuber with fitness guides and merchandise. How did it all, and you're at uni or just like?
Yes, I'm at uni.
How did this all start?
So it did kind of start by accident, actually. I know a lot of the fitness industry now is people starting up Instagram accounts or blogs or whatever to help showcase their kind of fitness and how they live fitness and all of that. Whereas mine actually kind of started completely sort of the opposite, which was me trying to motivate myself by using social media. So I started up an Instagram account literally just to motivate myself and to keep myself accountable for going to the gym and for trying to get fit, because I'd been trying for ages. And so I started up this account and I would post when I kind of had a healthy meal or when after I worked out, I'd take a selfie, that type of thing. And I literally just did it like that. I did not know it was a job. I did not know people were kind of blowing up on social media. All I thought it was that celebrities would be big on social media and I was going to use it to hopefully get into fitness finally and actually stick to something for once.
And how long ago, sorry, how long ago was that?
That was 2-3 years ago now, maybe. Yes, I think 3 years ago, which is absolutely crazy to think about it.
So when you first started putting these images out there, did you have quite a positive reaction or was it something that, because obviously fitness has become such a trend and it's such a fashionable thing to do now, but especially when I was at university, I can't imagine my friends were really that into fitness.
Yeah, so I was actually in sixth form at the time when
I started it.
Yeah, I know, I'm very young,
so
I'm
depressing.
A baby. So I was actually in sixth form when I started it. So it was quite difficult just because I think in school or that type of environment, it's very much you're supposed to fit into a box and you're supposed to do a certain thing a certain way and everything. And I didn't even try to do this to be like different or to do anything. I did it completely secretly. My only my two of my best friends and my little sister knew about it, and my boyfriend at the time, and they weren't allowed to say a word about it. They weren't allowed to look at it because they thought it would recommend it to other people. They weren't allowed to like photos, follow
so
it,
hang on,
anything.
Were you a private account?
I wasn't a private account because I wanted to be part of like the fitness community, so I did not show my face until I had 10k followers, at which point I was kind of like, okay, no going back. But I didn't show my face, I didn't say my name, my username was completely, I can't even remember what it was. It was very, very rogue. It was a combination of a few things. And it was, so it was just kind of all a mix of me trying to stay private but motivated so I could be part of the community as a person, but not, it wasn't kind of part of my daily life.
When was that change?
I think
10K.
I think it's actually just been, I think it kind of, the more it grew and the more people found out about it and everything, the more I was kind of like, originally I was like, God, I've got to delete this. This is so embarrassing. This is actually, I'm mortified. I've got to delete this. I've got to stop it. I'm not going to do it anymore. And I nearly deleted the account quite a few times just because I was like, oh, I just don't really feel comfortable. I can motivate myself, whatever. But actually I was really, really enjoying the community and getting motivated by people and hopefully motivating other people, especially because this was right at the beginning of my journey. It wasn't like I wasn't fit already or anything. And so I just kind of continued, and then I guess it just grew more and more, and I moved on straight away from sick form to, I did a 13-month internship, so I went straight into working, but then while I was there, it was kind of just a thing on the side as well. It just kept up my fitness. I'd still just post kind of once a day when I went to the gym or like when I made a healthy meal. I love making healthy recipes, things like that. And then it just grew and grew, and I guess over the past year it's really, really, really grown a lot. So so then it's kind of become much more of my kind of who I am, and obviously my job as well. But it's kind of snowballed, but there was never a point where I was like, look, I'm going to concentrate on it now. It's more that it's kind of done that by itself, and so I've thought, you know what, I should embrace this and I should enjoy it, and I really am.
Okay, so let's talk about photos. So we were discussing just before, I don't know if you heard, that there was a PT and Instagrammer who's come out and said that actually no one should be striving to look like what she looked like in her professional Instagram pictures, and that actually it's a really unhealthy lifestyle. And this is Anna Rhodes. Her account is Anna Rhodes Fitness. And she said that her body was down to extreme dieting rather than fitness, and that she was emaciated and exhausted. What's your take on that as a fitness influencer?
So first of all, Anna Rhodes is one of my really good friends by chance. I did see that post and I thought it was fantastic, especially when you're kind of around people who are competing and you do know what they're going through. You know that they are not going one calorie or one macro over what they're kind of trying to. You know that they're training every day, often multiple times a day. They are not coming out. They're not going out for meals, or if they are, they're bringing Tupperware. And it's so crazy. And I think that it's so interesting because that is often then represented as fitness. And I think it's one of the big things to say is, first of all, the health industry and the fitness industry are very different things. They are, and kind of the aesthetics that come with fitness are often associated with health, but are often so far from health, you could not even imagine. I think as a fitness influencer, kind of what I try to do is I'm very much someone who more portrays myself and more represents myself as someone who's a kind of lifestyle fitness goer. So I'm a student first and foremost, and I go to the gym, but I also go out, I also eat out, I also spend time with my friends. I often skip the gym for a good period of time if I'm just not feeling like it, or if I'm swamped with work and everything. And I think essentially I think that, first of all, that was a very kind of brave and real thing of Anna to do. I also think that it's very important for us to represent ourselves as honestly as possible. And I know that there have been times where I have been absolutely slaving away in the gym, making sure I'm eating very certain things, very particular about my food, looking at a menu a week in advance if I'm not going out for dinner, that type of thing. And I personally don't want to be there. And I also would think that is not healthy at all. Like, that is, even if inside you were super healthy, because actually the meals you were planning were full of micronutrients and everything, and you were getting great amount of calories, that's not healthy for you. That's not healthy in terms of mental health. And I think as a fitness influencer, kind of as honest as you can be about those types of things, like, that's incredibly important.
So refreshing to hear. It really, really is. And I think people forget that. And it's refreshing to hear as well that you do have a life. It's not like this is everything and you don't eat. You're like, yes, I do. But like, you do, you know, go out and socialise. You do eat wherever you want. Let's talk about your merchandise, first of all. Tell us a little bit about that.
So first of all, about a year and a few months ago, I brought out fitness guides, my first fitness guides. And first of all, again, this was kind of as what seems to be kind of the trajectory of my career. It was kind of a complete accident in
that's
that.
Brilliant.
I wanted to start like a challenge, a kind of New Year challenge. And I'm not this kind of like New Year, you must change, that type of thing. But I also will always kind of preach the importance of using both goals and using something to spur you on. So I know that, like, something like New Year, just something that is a day there that you'll be like, right, okay, I'm going to start on that day. That's fine. I honestly could not see a single problem with that. So I wanted to do a New Year challenge with like a load of people, and basically you could either be fully involved with the challenge where you'd get check-ins every week where we'd have like a little email conversation, how are you doing, how are you finding this and everything, or you could do it bi-weekly, or you could just have the workouts and the recipes. And so I released those workouts, and that was the workouts only option of the challenge. And within a few days, that had thousands of people who had just decided to do the workouts only challenge. And that wasn't meant to be a guide in itself at all, but that I then put more work into it and released it as a full PDF with loads of information in, loads of workouts, and essentially 8 weeks of training. And I released that as a guide, and then I released the second one in February last year, and then I released a third one at the end of last year, and then basically in around November, I released my first kind of gym merch, which were resistance bands. And the reason I did these were, again, I was never originally going to go into gym products, but actually I found with resistance bands, so these are either referred to as resistance bands or hip circles, the kind of shorter ones, they were all terrible quality. They rolled up, they snapped, they were painful, but they're really, really good when they're good. And the good ones were super expensive. So I basically decided with the company I work with that we were going to make really good resistance bands and sell them for cheap and make them ethically, and kind of do that. And that was high up on our kind of priority list. So we released those, and those did incredibly well. In our first launch, we had, I think, over 20,000 people try to buy the bands, and we had nowhere near that, so that was amazing. And then we moved on to other types of merch. So we've got ankle straps for cable machines at the gym, we've got barbell pads, and hoodies. I'm wearing a hoodie right now, just cheeky plug.
Yeah,
And we've got workout mats now. All of it is completely ethically made and vegan. So, and we've made them as cheap as possible, so they're not kind of meant to be these huge, like, money-making merch things. It's more that I especially do want to make working out and fitness as accessible as possible. And I know this seems kind of silly by then bringing out products, but I will never, ever say that any of them are necessary to be healthy and fit. I'd always just say that only you are needed to be healthy and fit. But if you want fancy, cool, pretty things as well, I will make them for you. So yeah, it's kind of along those lines. But yeah, I've got quite a lot of merch now, and that's been
amazing.
Absolutely incredible.
That
is pretty much
time.
It, isn't it?
Yeah.
Grace, that's been so interesting. Just very quickly before we go, if you could do one form of workout, be it resistance, cardio, body weight, what would it be?
I think resistance always. Just, I feel like it empowers me. I love being strong, and I think it really, you can really use it to push you cardio-wise as well if you do it kind of properly and if that's what you want to do.
That's cool. Brilliant. I just want to copy and paste so I can look like you. Not going to lie. Grace, thank you so, so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
That's all we've got time for today. Thank you for watching Pitch Talk and happy birthday, Olivia Cox.
Thank you so much.
Bye.
This past hour, you've been listening to Pitch Talk with Rachel Downey and Olivia Cox. To listen again, simply go to foobarradio.com or our app where this episode and all past episodes are free to stream or download. Send all questions, comments or queries to pitch@foobarradio.com or tweet @foobarradio.